Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Katie Weaver Show. This is Katie. I'm your host. I'm so happy to be here. If you are listening live, it is about 11 a.m. Pacific time on the first day of October. If you're listening to an archive or a replay, I also want to welcome you to the show. I want to let you know that I'm over in the chat room. You can find it by heading over to 12radio.com. That's number 12radio.com. And click on the chat button and you'll be redirected into the Facebook chat and you will find others there. My banner is posted at the top of the page so you can comment there and I will see it. I've got eyes on it. Also, if you would rather listen or watch than listen, you can do that by heading over to YouTube or Facebook. Look for Katie Weaver Domestic Mystic and you'll find my live stream there. And I also have my eyes in those chat rooms. So either way, I'll see your comments, so you're welcome to ask questions or contribute to the conversation. I'd love to have you. So, welcome. How's it going? I always feel like I should pre-record that part, you know? Because it's the same every time. I should pre-record it, so it's just something that we all hear every week. But whatever, it doesn't kill me to say it. How is everybody? How was your weekend? Are you safe? I'm very worried about my clients and listeners and friends that were in the path of Hurricane Helene. I hope you guys are okay. Check in with me, please. I worry about all of you. So I hope you're all right. And if you're not, let us know. Let us know what we can do to help. Because the rest of us are sitting across the world, particularly here in the States, just wringing our hands. It's hard to know what to do to help. So sending lots of good vibes and hoping for the best and watching for ways to help. That's what I'm doing. I'm sure a lot of you guys are the same. So I have to show you my new mug. You believe how freaking cute this is? It is. Oh, I didn't put a picture in the other chat room. I'm so negligent. I'll do it right now. It's a mushroom mug. Matea and I were shopping this weekend at a Home Goods, and she showed me this mug, and I literally like took it out of her hands and said, I want that. Are you buying that? I'm gonna buy that. She was like, okay, well, I guess you're gonna buy that. And then we found another one, so we both bought one. But I just think it is so damn cute. And you know how I feel about cute mugs. Special mugs. Cauldron mugs, as you know. Anyway, I am in love. It sounds like you and your sister. Yeah. This is how it goes. Well, Matt's, her Halloween aesthetic is pretty similar to mine. And so we both find things we want, you know. You know how it is. Speaking of my visit to the kids this weekend, I told you that we were going to do a grilled cheese flight. What does that mean? Well, like, you guys have probably had like a margarita flight maybe, or a mimosa flight, or a beer flight, right? So it's become popular to do other kinds of flights. Like a while ago, we did a deviled egg flight for dinner one night. So this is similar, but we did it with grilled cheese. So each one of us chose a sandwich, except for Mars. She just, this kid's balancing, you know, trying to work close to full time and her juniorish/seniorish year of college. And, you know, she's a little busy. We're trying to be patient. Anyway, just kidding. School is the most important thing right now, without question. I stress it all the time. But at any rate, so I made a smoked Gouda blackberry compote grilled cheese sandwich on sourdough. Scott made a bacon Harlsberg Chardonnay aged white cheddar with hot honey on ciabatta. Matea made a classic Reuben. Grilled cheese, right? It's grilled. It has cheese. It counts. And Micah made a bourbon maple or a bourbon bacon jam and put that on his sandwich with a couple of different kinds of cheeses. And then he made a glaze for his sandwich out of blackberries and plums and sriracha and sugar. It was amazing. So, yeah, that's how we did it. Is everybody made two sandwiches, cut them into pieces. Scott also made a pot of homemade roasted tomato garlic soup. And so we just cut all of our sandwiches into wedges and put them out on the table. And then you got to try a little bit of everybody's. It was awesome. It turned out super good. I would definitely do that again. And my sandwich, I'd do that again in a heartbeat. I just took blackberry jam and I warmed it and put a little bit of like spices in it. I spiced it a little bit and put a tiny bit of balsamic vinegar in it. And that was my blackberry compote. You could easily make that with blackberries too, but frankly, we were traveling, you know, hauling food down there, and I went the easy way, but that worked out just fine. So at any rate. Oh, Suzanne said 1-2 is breaking up and goes on and off. Oh, I don't know why. Well, I'm glad you're over here then. No idea. Unfortunately, I can't really troubleshoot that at all. But thanks for letting me know. Anyway, so that turned out super good. We shopped. We had fun. We went to my nephew's football games. And it was fun. We had a great weekend. So that's what we did. Yes, it's Jimmy Carter's birthday. He is 100 years old. Happy birthday, Jimmy. It's also his first birthday without his dear wife because she passed within this last year. So, yeah. JR said, off topic, but I've noticed the older I get, my favorite colors change. Me too. I've noticed that as well. I've noticed, really, my favorite everythings have changed. I get it now. Like, what comforts you is different, right? What draws you is different. Interesting. Ooh, that's a good one too, Sid. She said, the jam reminded me of my old favorite Monte Cristo. Grilled cheese and ham, dipped in egg, fried and served with blackberry jam. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that. I think that would count in the grilled cheese flight, right? I'm wearing my Halloween town. Pull over today because it's cold. It's cold here. When I went out to feed the crows this morning, and the crows are back. So the crows, you know, they show up in about March, and they're pretty hot and heavy around here until July-ish. And then feeding gets so good on the grasshoppers, and as the crops get tilled up and there's fresh meat about, you know, they don't need me as much. They're not here as much. But the magpies never really leave, so I keep feeding. But last week I started hearing a few yells. Yesterday morning I started hearing a bunch of yells and went out to feed, and four of them, so all four from this season, came in to feed. Pretty fun. I thought that was cool. So I'm glad they're back, but they'll only be back for, depending on what our weather does, maybe another couple of weeks. And then they will leave until, you know, about March, and then they'll be back. But the magpies aren't going anywhere, so we'll keep on feeding. Also, the ladies across the street are moving. My elderly neighbor passed away a couple months ago, and her adult daughters that live there are trying to sell the house and move. And they have two or three cats, two that come over here a lot, but I think a third that maybe is just more skittish. I'm very worried that they're going to ditch those cats. They haven't been good kitty owners. So if that happens, we'll have to cross that bridge when we come to it, because those cats come over here and get fed every day. So I don't know. I don't want any cats because we live on a very scary highway. And I've always said I would never have a cat because I can't keep them safe on our road. Cannot. And one time a few years ago, you might remember if you've been here with me a long time, that a cat adopted us, and he was literally climbing in our bedroom windows, shredding screens to get into the house, like sleeping in our beds. We went camping and came home and he was sound asleep in Micah's bed. We finally went, I guess we have a cat. So we went and bought food in a litter box and made it official, though I discovered later that Scott had been feeding him in the garage for a while. and I just didn't know. But we love Jeff. We fell deeply in love with Jeff. The cats love Jeff. The kids love Jeff. And sure enough, Jeff got hit on the freaking highway. And I went, we are not having cats. We can't keep them safe. It is not right. Now, these cats, I mean, they've lived here for many years and haven't made it out onto the highway. So maybe they're safer than I think. But I hope I don't have to help rehome those cats. I will. I will. I'm not going to let them suffer. And of course, I'll keep feeding them in the interim. But gosh, I really hope they take good care of them. Hey, Rebecca. I really, really hope they take good care of them. And don't, like, move and ditch them. I'm worried that's going to happen. We'll see. To my biggest shame, the people that we sold my parents' house to have been horrible cat owners and have filled this neighborhood with stray cats that we didn't have in the meantime. And it's super frustrating. I went over there one time because there was a cat that was like living at my house and I wasn't sure if it was theirs. So I knocked on the door, me and Mateo with these kitties, and one of the kids said, yeah, that's one of ours, but all of our cats are sick. And their aunt was there and she yelled at him in front of us, do not tell them that the cats are sick. No one needs to know about that. The fuck? Take care of your animals. My gosh. Anyway, so I blame myself because we brought this scourge into the neighborhood. But anyway, I'll just keep feeding the cats for now and hopefully they move with them and take good care of them. There's lots of farms nearby. Yeah, I'm sure I could rehome them if I had to. I just don't want to. But I don't want to keep them. I can't keep them safe. I just, it's not possible. Oh, I'm sure the stray cats have an impact on the wild bird population. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. Right, you rarely see a dog like that, at least where I live. But, oh my gosh, the cats. It's so frustrating. Plus, I live rural, and you gotta understand, I'm sure you guys, if you're rural, you understand this, but rural people, especially farm people, a lot of times, they're not very good with their dogs and cats. They have a very different attitude about animals than the rest of us. Yeah. Anyway. That's all. I have a show and tell, an exciting one. This might be the best thing I have ever made in my kiln. It's a dish. So it's, I hope you can see. It's full of leaves. It's got fall leaves all the way up the diagonal. And this is, that's how it sits. Here's the back of it. Isn't that cool? I'm so excited. I've had the capabilities of doing this all along, but I just hadn't had the, I don't know, been brave enough. You really dive in and hope, because every time you fire your glass, you run the risk of something stupid happening, of something blowing up in the kiln and effing it up, or of it blowing up or cracking, or, you know, you just, I hope the better I get, the more confident I get, but, you know, things happen. So anyway, I hate making mistakes, and so for that reason, I think I have hesitated to try. But I finally tried, and I'm very happy with it, so that's pretty fun. So this took 4 firings. So the leaves were one firing. Those are made separately. So I made the leaves first. Then I cut the glass. So the glass is one layer of clear glass, and then, you know, one side is yellow and the other side is orange. And I had to fuse all those together. So that's firing number 2. Then I had to do a lighter firing where I laid in all of the leaves on this flat piece of glass and fused them to the glass. So that's firing number 3. And then I had to lay it over top of what's called a slump mold so that it would melt and slump down in and make the dish shape. So that's firing number 4. So 4 trips to the kiln to come up with a dish like this. Which is crazy. Every trip in the kiln, well, not the leaves. The leaves are done in a smaller kiln that takes less time. But every trip into the larger kiln is about a 15-hour experience from start to finish until the kiln finally cools off enough that you can actually get your stuff out of it. So it's a fairly big deal. But anyway, I'm just excited. I put pictures in the chat room too, so you guys could see it. But and lessons were learned and mistakes were made, but it turned out. So we'll take it. It's fine. Got to get more brave. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's keep going. So happy October 1st. I'm so excited. You guys know this is absolutely my favorite time of year. Hopefully in the next few days, I'll have a video of our home decor, our yard, our Halloween yard. It's been set up for weeks, but I know there's a couple more things Scott wants to do. I'm so excited because we have to go to Montana later, and the weather is so gorgeous, and it is going to be so beautiful up there. Absolutely beautiful. Up towards, up along the edge of Yellowstone Park. So, very cool. Anyway, okay, well, let's keep moving. So, let's do Luminous, actually. I'm going to put a link in the chat rooms. You may have already received it. New artwork today in Luminous, so that's exciting. All right, let me share my screen. One of the things to me that is really exciting about this time of year is just how thin the veil is, and our connection to the other side always seems to be easier. And so that's what I was thinking about today when I put Luminous together. Of course, I had to do. It's going to be spooky season all month long. You already know. So gird your loins. Here we are. Alrighty. I called this edition the I See Dead People edition. That's a little nod to a movie that scared me half to pieces when it first came out. Because I hadn't quite embraced my gifts at that point. And I used to be very scared of dead people, of dead things. I'm still terrified of dead animals. I'm not going to lie. If I see a dead animal, there is panic every time. But I used to be very afraid of dead people in general. Funerals, viewings, things like that were really, really hard for me. Because I did see dead people. And finally, when I was in my early mid-20s, my kids were babies. Micah was a baby, and we moved into our house, the house we still live in. And I have been in this house for 24 years. Can you even? No, I cannot even. Will I ever move? I don't know. There's a part of me that really wants to move, and another part of me that looks around and goes, my God, the amount of work to move from this house, I can't even fathom it. We'll see. Economically, my house appraises for 3 times what I paid for it, but everything else does too, so that may not be in my favor. At any rate, when we moved into this house, every time I would walk through my bedroom past the closet, I could see someone hanging in the closet. And it was terrifying. I was so afraid of this house because of that, that when Scott would go to work, a lot of times I would load Micah up and take him over to my mom's house because I couldn't stand to be here. And at the time, my brother-in-law was pretty suicidal. He was most of his adult life. And I thought maybe I was having a premonition that he was going to die. But recognize this is, I was still deeply religious. I was still on a different path and not embracing my own gifts at all, scared to death of them. And so I hadn't done anything with that except for that I just, every time I'd walk through there, I would see a man hanging in the closet. And it was so freaky. So fast forward to when Mateo was born. Well, sorry, no. I got in a car accident when I was pregnant with Matea. Micah was a baby. You know, those two are only 14 months apart. And ended up injured, and I had to go to massage therapy for a little while. So we were going to, I was going to my friend Kim. She was a friend of my sister's. So I knew of Kim, but I didn't know Kim well. But I knew that Kim was gifted. I just didn't really know much about that. So, however, being raised in the Mormon church, it wasn't unheard of to hear people talking about premonitions or of seeing people that had passed, particularly like in the temple and things like that. So it's not like that was completely off out of pocket. And I'd had lots of dreams about people that had died, and those seemed to be okay for me. It was the seeing. Anyway, so I had a massage from Kim, and I just felt really strongly that I should talk to her about that. So I said, there's this thing happening in my house, and I wondered if you had any thoughts on that. And she said, oh, well, did you ask him what he wants? I was like, no, I'm not asking him shit. And I was like, ask him how? She's like, just ask him. Ask him why he's there. And I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm just never going in that bedroom again. She was like, you live there, so this is not an option. We have to figure this out. So she talked to him. Turned out, long before my home was here, there had been a man that was hung on my property for a crime that he didn't commit. And that put the other piece of my paranoia with this house together, because when we moved in here, I was constantly afraid the house was going to burn down. I would unplug everything before we went to bed. The dogs, the baby, everybody had to sleep in my bedroom because I was so scared that something was going to happen. So, because I was seeing fire in this house. So, at any rate, he explained to Kim that he was accused of setting a fire, and he was hung for setting a fire that killed some people, that, and he says he didn't do it. And but that's what happened. He was hung where my house is. And so he was still just hanging around here, trying to get somebody to hear him say that, well, he didn't do it. So she acknowledged that. Also asked him to please go. He had not crossed over, so that was part of probably what I was feeling, because people that haven't crossed over have a, they feel whatever they felt when they died, a lot of times, kind of, you know, panicked, scared, frantic. So she helped him cross over, asked him to go, you know, and he did. And I never saw him again in my house. I never saw the flames again in my house. And that was it. So, she said, when are you going to figure out how to do this for yourself? You have a gift, you should be using it to help yourself and to help other people. And I was like, 100% never. That's when. I don't want this gift. I don't like it. I'm not doing it. And she really laughed and said, well, too bad. Because it's one of your gifts. Like, you can't, it's that's not how that works. So I was like, well, too bad, because this is how it's going to be for me. And it still took me another couple of years to be able to really embrace it for myself. Scott's stepbrother was killed in a car accident in Pahrump, Nevada, just outside of Las Vegas. And we'd only ever met Tony, I don't know, maybe twice. You know, we're not particularly close with Scott's side of the family. We're close with his dad, but with his mom and sisters, it's gotten better with his sisters over the years, but you know, we weren't particularly close. We'd only met Tony a couple of times. And we went to the funeral because Tony's little brother and Scott's little sister were both still here in Idaho. Scott's mom and stepdad had gone straight to Pahrump when the accident first happened. And so the kids were here and they wanted them, you know, to be there to go to the funeral. So we loaded up the kids and we drove them to Las Vegas and we went to the funeral. And it, the funeral was at a funeral home and there was a viewing. And I'm not, unless I really know somebody, I'm not a big fan of the viewing piece. It just stays with me for too long. And so I hadn't gone up to the casket. I didn't want to. And so we were kind of sitting in the back of the room. And again, we were feeling very awkward. We didn't know any of these people. And, you know, he had an ex-wife. He had children. He had, you know, a lot of friends. I mean, there were a lot of people there grieving. And we just didn't really feel like we fit there. So we were just sitting at the very back of the room, kind of just staying out of the way. And, but I was still kind of looking at the casket, thinking about the accident itself was kind of a mystery. It happened in the middle of the night up on the side of a mountain, and nobody knew exactly what happened or why. So, and there had been some speculation that perhaps it was a suicide. And so Tony just starts talking in my ear about what happened. And what, you know, essentially he just fell asleep. It was just an accident. It was exactly what it looked like. It was just an accident. He said he'd been out driving around late at night because he couldn't sleep and because he was struggling a lot with his, you know, with himself. And so he, but he didn't kill himself. And he was explaining that to me. Not that I have any judgment on that. I don't. But so he was explaining that and how he rolled and, you know, that in some ways he felt like he could be a better dad to his kids on the other side now because he and his ex-wife were in such such struggles. And, you know, we just had this whole conversation. And that really, it gave me some courage. It helped me see how not scary this was. Like, it wasn't scary. Tony was just speaking to me, just having a conversation. There was nothing scary about it. And it kept coming back to me something that Sylvia Brown used to say, which was, you'll see scarier things in a movie from Hollywood than you ever will on the other side. And that was absolutely correct for me. So anyway, Tony really helped me to expand my gifts. I will say I totally let Tony down, and he knows, and like, we're cool here, but he wanted me to tell his dad so some things, and I did not feel like I could do that because again, our relationship with them was very strained. Ed was not somebody, he was an atheist, and he was not somebody that was going to be interested in messages like this, and I was a coward. So he had all these things he wanted me to tell his dad. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. You can do that. You have the right to do that. You don't have to do things that take you that far out of your comfort zone unless you choose to. Like, you don't. And I think I needed to learn that too. But he, for years, would come every so often and check in with me and just ask me if I felt like I could do that yet. And I said, no, I did try to help arrange, help him to, you know, visit his dad in dreams so that he could tell him himself. And that's where that landed. But for years, he would come, he'd turn on the faucet in the kitchen. I'd walk in there and that faucet would be running and I'd be like, oh, Tony's here. So that's the conversation, you know, so then we would speak. But at any rate, Tony taught me a lot about his presence not being frightening, not being foreboding, and that also I could have boundaries with this gift. And that's when I started learning how to set boundaries with this gift and start to work as I chose rather than me being worked upon. So I don't know why I told you that whole story today. I guess it needed to come out. That's what needed to be said. But that was a good start for me. And then I started practicing more, you know, with people who I knew that had passed. And also sometimes just reading the obituaries and talking to people who had passed and helping people around me. And that's where I started building enough confidence to work professionally. Yeah. Right? Now I've been here that long, Laurie. Right. As soon as it wasn't scary anymore, it just wasn't scary anymore. Yeah. Right. Hollywood has harmed the image of spirituality and mental illness. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Tony was a great teacher. I will say when my mom died, I received that much more confidence because I had such a strong ally on the other side that could help me if I needed it. And then my dad as well. And now I rarely ask them for help, but I can. I think that's the piece, right? Yeah. Except for Stephen King, right? Not King Stephen. No. We love Stephen King. God damn it. I agree. I'm with you, Lillianne. Okay. Well, let's move on to what I was thinking about today was the idea of the other side in a lot of different paths of spirituality. I was thinking about the fact that for time immemorial, there has been some belief about what the other side is like, whether we cease to exist or we do not. And so I thought it would be fun to explore a little bit more of that. So, ancient Egyptians. They were the big planners, right? They didn't just believe in life after death. They mapped it out. They had all their plans set for their next life or for what was going to happen to come. Of course, as you know, they had very sophisticated embalming figured out, the mummies. They believed that the deceased had to pass a series of tests, including a final judgment by the god Osiris. The heart was weighed against a feather to determine if you lived a good moral life. If the scales balanced, congrats, you made it to the field of reeds, an eternal paradise. If not, well, there was a crocodile god waiting on you. But the ancient Egyptians, we've learned a lot about death from the ancient Egyptians and what their beliefs were. In Hinduism, the cycle of samsara, again, death is not a final destination in Hinduism. They believe in the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. What you're reborn as depends on your karma or the sum of your good and bad deeds. We know this, right? Or this belief. Good karma can give you a more favorable birth into a better situation, and bad karma might put you in a really bad one. So the goal is to break free from karma and reach a state of moksha, a state of eternal bliss. Christianity, we know. Christianity has this idea that there is heaven and there is hell, and there's the waiting room, some call purgatory, for those who aren't ready for heaven but don't deserve hell either. In Mormonism, that is called a spirit prison. Sounds like fun. In Buddhism, the journey towards enlightenment, Buddhists also believe in reincarnation, but they have a little different idea of it. To reach nirvana, which is a state of perfect peace and liberation from the cycle of suffering and rebirth. So in Buddhism, every life is an opportunity to practice things like mindfulness, wisdom, compassion, moving closer with every lifetime to enlightenment. Buddhists just see death as a transition, but not something to be feared. There are many ceremonies that are done for people after they die, a puja, to help escort them into their next life. Indigenous beliefs. Many indigenous cultures view death as a natural continuation of life, whereas the dead live on in the spirit world. So some tribes believe in a spirit world where the dead can interact with the living, offering guidance and protection. In some cultures, ancestors are revered as honored as they remain an active part of the community after death. An active part of the community after death. Isn't that a cool thought? I think it's true. We just don't see that activity, right, in our day-to-day functioning, but I love the idea of that, that the dead are an active part of the community. The Mexican tradition, Dia de los Muertos. In Mexico, of course, Dia de los Muertos shows us that death can be a celebration. Have you ever watched Coco? If you haven't watched Coco on Disney Channel or on Disney, you should. That's all I will say about that. Spiritualism, connecting to the other side. As we know, in the 19th century, this got to be like a parlor trick, right? In Victorian homes, they would have mediums come in to do seances, to try to connect with spirits. Of course, this is at some point when the Ouija board was born. Mostly they were reaching out for those who had passed on for comfort, for wisdom, for guidance, to just know they were still there. We know that there was plenty of fraud during that time, but also a lot of really amazing experiences from people that were legit. So it's a fun study and contemplation, I think, to think about what other cultures and what other eras thought about death and the other side. So that's just a peek. Yeah. Yeah, good point. They did worship cats also, yes, so they knew what was up, yes. Laurie said, I've always felt that the funeral process, including the viewing, was a very macabre tradition. I think so too. Oh, I'm just nervous. Christy and I both had different reasons to be nervous about water, JR, yeah. Not because of our abilities, but because, well, for Christy, she had a past life where she was a pearl diver, where she was attacked by sharks. And it's taken her a long time to work through that one. So that's her nervousness. I'm just nervous in water. Like, to go out on a boat, I cannot relax. What's under the surface scares me too much. So I don't enjoy stuff like that at all. The ocean makes me nervous. The ocean makes me super nervous. And I do think it's, I guess you're right though. I mean, it is because of, I think it's because of past lives and, experiences that I've had with the ocean in the past. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that on viewings very much. When I was in high school, when I was a senior, I was in a AP English and Literature class, and there was a lot of writing in that class, of course, and I was a good writer then, and I enjoyed it a lot. But one thing that I thought was really, really interesting was, so I had to, for my senior paper, I was writing an anthology of Lucille Ball. And that's when I learned about Lucille Ball's funeral. That was not. When Lucille Ball died, there were strict instructions from her that there would not be a funeral, there would not be a viewing, and there would not be a sad event. Instead, her family threw a giant celebration of life in a park and invited anyone that wanted to come. And there were posters everywhere of her from all of her life work. There was all kinds of food, recordings. It was just fun. It was just happy remembrances of her. There were some speakers, but again, like, she was absolutely solid on this. It better not be sad. I'm going to come back and kick ass, basically. And so it wasn't. It was wonderful. But I had grown up in a world of Mormon funerals that are very specific and are super uncomfortable and sad and ick. And healing too. That's not completely fair, but that was the first time I'd ever been exposed to this idea that you didn't have to do it. You know, we're so egocentric, but that way, and the idea of just doing a celebration of life, I think that's amazing. I love that about Lucy too. Always non-conventional, you know. I have been regressed. Yes. Yep, I have. I'll tell you about them one of these days. If I do it today, we'll run out of time. Okay. So Kelly, last week she did a podcast and an article about Haiti, about no hate for Haiti. And this week she expanded on that, talking about voodoo in the Haitian Revolution. Really interesting. Loved what she had to say. It helps me understand, because I think that voodoo has been bastardized in regular, or not regular, but mainstream culture in a way that we don't understand it. And we think we do, maybe, but we really don't. So anyway, read that, listen to her podcast. It's awesome. So my tip this week is to honor, hey Sherry, to honor your ancestors. So here's how. This is the right time of year for it. An ancestor altar. Create a special altar or shrine in your home dedicated to your ancestors. Place photos, candles, incense, and items that were important to them. If you don't have items that were important to them, just replicate that. You don't have to have exactly that their thing for it to stand for them. Offer food and drink as a symbol of remembrance. An altar does not have to be a big spot. I hear this from people a lot that would like to have an altar, but they don't really have a place for it. So, or I hear this from people too all the time, that they would like to have an altar, but their cats are going to muck it up. Okay, some thoughts. One, that you do it in a little enclosed space, like a cloche or a little enclosed, like glass greenhouse, you know, that sits on a tabletop or something to protect it from your cats. Two, you do it on a bookshelf or a high shelf in a place where cats can't get to it. Then that also stands for, if you don't have enough space, at the top of your dresser or a little spot on your dresser, a bookshelf or just a shelf on the wall are all great places to put together a little altar. It doesn't have to take up your whole house. It doesn't have to be the coffee table where it's going to be getting fiddled with and stuff. There are lots of solutions for you to have an altar if you want one. An ancestral feast. Prepare a meal using traditional family recipes or dishes that your ancestors enjoyed. Share the meal with loved ones and take time to talk about your family's history and stories. I love this one. We do this a lot in my family. Ancestral meditation. Spend some time meditating or reflecting on your ancestors. Light a candle and visualize connecting with them, expressing gratitude and seeking guidance. Visit grave sites. If possible, visit the graves of your ancestors to clean, decorate, and leave offerings. It's a traditional way to show respect and honor their memory. And I know that's not always possible depending on where you live or if you're if cremation was in play, or if you even know where those graves are. I have a great, great, great grandfather, I think 3 generations, maybe 4 generations back, that was a polygamist. Remember, I was raised Mormon. He was a polygamist, and he had a wife near where I live. And he also had a wife in a little town in Idaho called Lava Hot Springs. And he's buried, no one knows where, because there's a grave for him here in a close cemetery to where I live, where my family swears that is where his body was laid to rest. There is also a grave for him in Lava Hot Springs. We went there. My mom loved cemeteries as much as I do. And we were traipsing around that cemetery one day and we found his grave. And I was like, wait a minute. Is he buried in Annis? And my mom was like, yeah, he is. Both of those cemeteries are claim that his body is there. Isn't that wild? Who knows? Maybe there was a third wife and he's buried somewhere else entirely. I have no idea, but pretty wild. We knew he had a family there, but I guess we didn't really understand how extensive they were. We walked through a museum in that little town. It's like a little resort town. And we were just there, you know, swimming, shopping, playing for the day. And we walked through their little museum. And we were just shocked to discover all of these people who looked exactly like our family. And then we discovered they were all a part of his family, his other family. Wild stuff. Polygamy is wild, man. And no, no one in my family practices polygamy, in case you're wondering. That was a very long time ago. Oh, Karen said her sister just made one of her deceased mother's recipes. Currently, I'm making another one of her recipes. Love it. I love that, too. Denise said she was at a celebration of life for her cousin on Saturday. She knew her time was ending, so she helped plan the food, picture slideshow, etc., even a small video of her speaking to everyone attending. The video part was new for me, but somehow fitting of her personality. That's cool, Denise. I love that. That is so brave, in my opinion. To be able to be real about what was going on and to be able to do that. Good on her. Okay. Christy's energy exercise for the week is stress release. Plenty of, you know, crime over at True Crime Squad. Jamie Dawn has a brand new video for Eclipse Week. We're in Eclipse Week again. Explore new parts of yourself. Very cool. Lots of meditations over at Planet Meditation on YouTube. And that's it. That's it for this week for Luminous. So I hope you found some gems in there. Lillian, you said that you did. So good. I like this episode a lot. Episode. I think it's not an episode. Well, whatever. Lillian, if you do any readings and have time, would you check on my friend Mike? Will he be okay and will I ever see him again? All right, let's feel into Mike. Okay, yes, but very compromised. I think you will see him again, Lillian. It's okay news. It's not great news. Yeah. Yeah. JR said, often African ethnicities from all over the world celebrate life. That's the reason for joyful, upbeat music and bright colors. I love that. Let's see. Sid said, I think I've made progress being comfortable with past animals being at my house. I have never seen, but feel like I have sensed their presence. Those are welcome occasions. Yeah. Often when you've lost a dear pet, you'll see, smell, hear remnants of them still hanging around. Sometimes I hear people say sometimes that they see them kind of out of the corner of their eye walk around a corner, or they will feel them on the bed next to them, or maybe hear their little meow or bark in the distance, or their little whine, or perhaps a smell. One person told me she knew when her deceased cat was near because she could smell her breath. Thanks, but no thanks. But yeah, they're always around. Jessica said, can you tell if others have a gift as well? Wondering if I have something in me. To be honest, with mediumship, I think everybody has the ability. I think that if you get over your fear, your own preconceived notions, and allow yourself, I think everybody can experience the other side. But Jessica, because you're wondering, I feel like that is something that you should explore. Yeah. Hey, Jacqueline. I don't know what's up with him, Lillian. He just doesn't feel right to me. I feel like there's something going on. Things just don't feel right. Well, I check in with Wishka. Jacqueline said she is still AWOL. Oh, boy. That's her kitty. She's been AWOL now for, gosh, what are you going to tell me, 10 days, I'm thinking? Maybe a little more than that. She's been traveling the wrong direction. I do still feel like she's living. She doesn't feel injured or anything to me. I feel like she's still out there. I'll send her home again. She just feels to me like she's kind of doing the feral thing. Yeah. Interesting. Maybe it is the depression, Lillian. 'Cause, yeah. And maybe that's why he comes through this compromised, too. She is in the woods, yeah. Did you guys hear recently about some people that lost their cat in Yellowstone? Which, why was their cat in Yellowstone? I guess they just take their cat with them when they camp and travel in their car or like in their RV. Anyway, they lost their cat in Yellowstone, which is a terrifying thought. Couldn't find her, finally went back home to California, and she went home. 600 miles that cat went home. And now we have Miss Wishka that's in the woods that's probably within 10 miles of you, Jacqueline, and she's not coming home. Cats are so, they're fickle like that. But I did send her home again. But yeah, I agree that she's in the woods. Okay, Karen, can you take a look at the energy in my house and clear it? It seems there are a lot of obstacles lately. Not to mention my 18-year-old daughter won't stay here. She says that there used to be something here. Or she's sensing something there. Okay. Yeah, Karen, let's take a look. You have one of those properties that feels very dense. For whatever reason, that just is not, doesn't recycle its own energy very well, doesn't clear very well. I don't know why. You see some properties that are just almost self-clearing. They just are continually, the energy is moving really effectively, and some that are just, that just don't. I think it has something to do with like the ley lines in the land, the way the energy flows around you and through you, through your property. And yours is in one of kind of a dead zone where you don't get a lot of flow. So I am clearing your space. I'm going to suggest a couple of things. If you don't already, get some prisms, like some Swarovski crystals, like the prisms. You can buy prisms like that on Amazon all day long that hang in the windows. Hang a few in your windows, upstairs, downstairs if you have a basement, but hang them on the outside if you can, so that when the wind blows, it really sends that prism all the way through your space. That does an amazing job of continually clearing your energy, the energy of your space, in a way that not many things can. You may consider putting a crystal grid on the property. If you want to do that, I can help you figure that out too. I laid a lot of those. And then you might also want to consider a little fountain inside. Like in Feng Shui, you put a fountain near the front door. It doesn't have to be, but that's the idea, is that it'll continue to clear people's energy as they're entering and keep the energy of the space moving and flowing. So those are a few thoughts on how to help your home be more self-clearing. Because this is, I've seen this on other properties too. And, you know, again, like it's not, it's nothing that you have done or you know, could change really, except for to just set up more mechanisms for clearing in your space. But I did clear it now, and it was very heavy. I don't see any kind of an entity there, however. Just, you know, our homes tend to pick up a lot. That's where we are. It's where we grieve. It's where we convalesce. It's where we fight. It's where we play. It's, you know, a space where you shed a lot. So that's why. But there you go, Karen. Hopefully that helps. Okay. Yeah, that cat from Yellowstone was amazing. It's amazing that it's managed to stay alive. But, you know, it can happen. So we will all hold space. The Wishka just shows back up in the next day or two. No worse for the wear. And, you know, apologizes for this absence. This is a cat, so that's not going to happen. But she's going to come back. She's just not going to apologize because she just... what she wants when she wants, because that's what cats do. Well, we've really done it. And yeah, I'll try to remember also, but we can talk a little more about regressions next week and the ins and outs of that. And I'll share some of my own regressions with you guys. So yeah. Well, you're so welcome. Thanks for being here, you guys. Don't forget, I am a professional psychic advisor over at 12listen.com. That's number 12listen.com. And you can find me over there every day doing readings and healings and everything in between, and including mediumship. And I can also do past life work for you if you would like. Obviously, past life regressions are one thing, but if you just have a past life you're wondering about, or a situation, or, you know, something that you think might be attributed to a past life, I can look at that specifically too. So easy enough there. And I'm there daily. If you come over there and I'm not there and you need me, just do a callback request or schedule a call. When you do that, I get a text that you're waiting for me, and I will get signed in so that I can be available for you as soon as I can. So, but it is my full-time job, and I am available most of the time. So I appreciate you guys a lot. Thank you so much for being here. I will be back next week, same place, same time. You know the deal. The drill, the deal. I don't know. I don't know the drill, apparently. Thanks so much for being here, guys. This has been yet another production of The Katie Weaver Show here on 12 Radio, where we're changing the way you listen to the world.